Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Thursday, February 6th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so, as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me here as we get a day closer to the weekend. Two guests join me on today's show. The first, professional handicapper Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. We'll wrap up Super Bowl 54. We'll highlight the Pac-12 in college basketball. Then also take a look at National Signing Day, which was yesterday. A lot of schools already had their recruits in place, but a few big signings, a few big things to update as we look ahead a little bit to that upcoming college football season. Second half of today's show, John Ryan, professional handicapper at John Ryan Sports and the number one on Twitter, will join me. We'll talk some Big East college basketball with him. We'll also take a look at some NBA buy and sell out there in the market as we're about a week away here from the NBA All-Star break. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. We got a lot of content going on every day over there at the website. Chris Wassel joined us this week with some NBA betting picks. He's got his third version of that article up over there right now. UFC 247 preview for this weekend. That main event, John Bones Jones and Dominic Reyes. You also have Valentina Shevchenko defending her title in that event down in Houston. We got daily NHL from Parker Michaels, daily college basketball and NBA stuff. We're about, I'd say, a week and a half to 2 weeks away from the start of my Major League Baseball content. And in fact, I'll be doing some more Major League Baseball stuff on Bang the Book Radio here as we go forward as well. As you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook, BTB, and the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. Two guests on the program here today, and we start with professional handicapper Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. Brad, how's it going today, man?
It's going well. Good to hear your voice on this fine Thursday.
Yeah, my voice when it's not cutting out. Holy shit, what a start to the show there with today's intro. What a start to my morning. I was telling Brad about this before the show. So I wake up, my truck's covered with ice. I'm thinking, all right, well, if I got to run out, if I got to go somewhere, I don't want to sit and wait for this to de-ice and defrost and all that. So I turned my truck on, come sit down, start doing some work, wind up leaving my truck running in the driveway for over an hour this morning. So I'm off to a really good start today. Brad, I hope your morning's gone a little bit better than mine.
Well, it's just starting. It started with talking to you because, I mean, we're minus 3 hours out here. We're 3 hours behind you, so. Wake up call was, you know, 6:30, and by the time I wiped the sleep away from my eyes, I was on the phone with you. So it's just getting started, and I'll tell you, wouldn't have it any other way.
I was going to say it's a pretty bad start to your morning, but at least your truck wasn't covered with ice.
That's something I don't worry about anymore. I've been here now 4 years. I've never had to scrape my truck, not once.
God, that sounds so nice. Yeah. What the hell am I doing here?
You got a beautiful house, nice truck. I mean, it's still home. That's the area you grew up in. There's still a lot of good. There's a lot of pluses, man.
I can have a nice truck out there. You do.
I do.
All right, man. So let's close up shop here on Super Bowl 54. Obviously, it feels like that game was an eternity ago now, even though it was just 5 days ago. And you know, an interesting result. Kansas City covers, wins by 11. They take care of business here. They do get that late garbage time touchdown. But overall here, Brad, your thoughts on kind of how the game played out?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I'll say a little bit surprised that, you know, Kansas City could do the same thing they did to Tennessee and Houston, rally so easily against what I perceive to be a better San Francisco defense. But I mean, I think that, you know, the best team when it's all said and done, I know Baltimore had a really good regular season, but I thought the best team in the NFL ended up winning the Super Bowl. The fact that Kansas City and Patrick Mahomes could play, you know, a subpar effort for 3+ quarters and flip on a light switch and not only win the game, but cover the game and win by 11 just goes to show you how good they are. A lot of the media, the popular national media narratives coming out of it, I mean, some of it, I think, are legitimate questions. And to me, I have more of a legitimate question about Jimmy G than I necessarily do Kyle Shanahan. But you got to ask yourself this moving forward with Kyle Shanahan. If he gets in another high leverage, high stakes type of game, whether it be like an NFC championship or yet another Super Bowl. What's his thought process now in the back of his head after, you know, blowing one as an offense coordinator and now blowing one as a head coach? That's something that you're going to have to consider if he gets back into the mix there. I think the other major takeaway is, you know, Jimmy G, I mean, there was questions entering the game. At least I had them. I mean, if you're down four and you need a touchdown, can Jimmy G be that guy? That was the exact scenario that popped up, and he misses an open wide receiver. So I think there's certainly some question marks on him. I think he's at least an average quarterback, maybe an above average. But is he good enough to win a Super Bowl? We know Patrick Mahomes is for Kansas City, and he's not going away anytime soon. Other than that, I'll say this from a betting aspect, and before I ramble too much more here, Adam, obviously the Mahomes rushing yards, the kneel downs at the end of the game were a tough pill to swallow for a lot of people, including myself. I mean, I posted that 28.5 ticket, that cash, but you know, I only got a dime down at that number. I loved that bet so much that I went ahead and re-bet it, and obviously the number was changed even after that one bet that I put in, and everything else that I bet on that prop did not come through.
Yeah, that was, oh man. I mean, that was a real difficult one for a lot of people to swallow, as you mentioned. And you know, it's interesting too. I mean, that late touchdown from Damian Williams put the second half over. You know, you thought maybe it brought Williams into the MVP discussion, but it winds up going to Mahomes. And quite frankly, I think rightfully so for the way that, you know, he orchestrated that comeback. I mean, he did not look good in the first half of that game. Very jittery, very jumpy, missing some throws he doesn't usually miss. Still finds a way to get it done. And again, you know, that is what kind of separates champions from a lot of the other really good quarterbacks that are out there that, you know, maybe haven't won anything. You know, Mahomes just found a way, and you give him a lot of credit for that. The Shanahan thing is tough for me because, again, I mentioned this earlier on in the week. People know I've got a man crush on that guy. I love Kyle Shanahan. I think he's a brilliant play designer. I think he's a brilliant scripter of a game plan, but he lost that game plan in the second half. You know, he almost outthought himself a little bit, tried to get too cute of proving that Jimmy G could be that guy. Maybe he wanted to answer that question in his own mind where they should have been running the football more in the second half. I know you're facing a loaded box, but I mean, you trust your offensive line. You trust your running backs. You don't trust Garoppolo in that spot. If you want him to prove something to you, you find a different litmus test for him to do that. And it probably wound up costing them the Super Bowl there. And like you said, now that's a lingering question that you kind of have about him. But good to see Andy Reid get one. I think Patrick Mahomes is, you know, obviously a very dynamic player, kind of a face of the NFL type of player. So it was good to see him get one. Kelsey with the local angle, I don't mind that. Juszczyk having a big game with the local angle here in Ohio, I don't mind that either. But, you know, again, it was one of those Super Bowls that didn't look like we were going to have a ton of drama, but then, of course, we wound up having a lot of it in the second half.
We did, and I thought overall it was an enjoyable viewing experience because, I mean, let's face it, not only is it a betting event, not only is it a football event, but it's just the event when it comes to our society. And I thought a thumbs up on the national anthem, especially obviously if you bet the under, but I thought she performed very well, Demi Lovato. I thought the halftime show was good. I just thought the overall production was good. It's not because I'm also an employee of Fox Sports, but I just thought the whole thing came off well, and it was a good Super Bowl because I'll tell you what, I'm sure you can remember growing up as a kid, Super Bowl wasn't necessarily we didn't have a lot of good games growing up. There was a you know, a large window there, 10-15 years where you only had a few good games. It seems like we get you know, a close good game almost routinely now in the Super Bowl. So I think that certainly helped add to the popularity. But the popularity, at least here in the state of Nevada, the props get bigger and bigger here, and somehow the public loses. And it's unbelievable that the hold percentage in a mature market like the state of Nevada was 12% for the books here. I got to wonder what people are betting out here, because, I mean, I thought I had some incredibly bad beats with the Mahomes. I thought Kelsey getting a rushing carry killed me on that Kansas City total rushers. That was brutal. And still, I mean, I won more props than I lost more props. And I thought those were two really you know, bad beats there. I don't get what people are betting out here. I don't know what they're doing.
That Kelce one was, or the, you know, the under 4.5 Chiefs with a rushing attempt. That one was just astonishing. I'm sitting there, I'm handicapping the game, and I go, I don't know how this could lose. And of course it finds a way, which I know you and I were kind of texting back and forth about it after the Super Bowl, because that was one that I had too, but. Oh,
I loved it. I mean, I bet it at minus 110. It closed minus 200. I mean, are you kidding me? It was stuff like that. I mean, I'm just going to be perfectly frank and candid. It makes you question what the hell am I doing in this industry? Because you have a good play like that and it goes down. Other than that, I mean, I guess the takeaway for me is I'd have no issues going right back and betting that again. I just wouldn't. So no, I thought it was a good bet, but you know, even great bets sometimes lose.
Yeah, even great bets, and even sometimes all those bets with some closing line value. You know, you can't pay your mortgage with CLV. If you could, it'd be great for a lot of us out there in the business. But unfortunately,
you think?
Yeah. Unfortunately, you can't do that, and sometimes it just doesn't work out. And you know, hopefully, you hope that a lot of those things regress to the mean, because the better the number you get, the more success you're supposed to have. Sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. More often than not, you certainly hope that it does wind up working out. But you mentioned Nevada and the great hold percentage, and part of that, of course, up in Reno, where San Francisco was probably being bet like, you know, they were guaranteed to win the game. But I know you've kind of been looking at this a little bit more here as this U.S. market has continued to grow with legalization. I know you've kind of been looking at some opportunities to pick off lines in New Jersey, probably looking at chances to pick off some lines in Pennsylvania, you know, from a futures standpoint, a season win total standpoint, stuff like that. And who knows, maybe you'll kind of travel around a little bit more in the lead up to the next season. But I thought that was interesting that Nevada killed it on the Super Bowl and other sports just, or other states just didn't.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, some of it's more reading into the, you know, the CEOs of some of the major players in, like, say, New Jersey, is they're treating the Super Bowl more like, you know, a kind of like a lead generator. Like they're offering some, yeah, exactly. And they don't care that, I mean, it's more of a write-off for them. They're looking to get people, you know, just to enjoy the experience of betting, because they're looking to take their money at a later date. It's not like that, you know, they're thinking, oh, we're going to lose some money here. It's okay. Well, they're thinking long-term, bigger picture. And I guess, you know, I think it's a major weakness of the sportsbooks guys here. It's all about the bottom line. And I get it to a certain extent, but when it's all said and done, if that's all they're going to worry about and they're not going to get creative with their props and it's always going to be status quo, then, you know, it's not going to happen within 3 to 5 years. But I'll tell you what, 10, 20 years from now, Nevada won't be the leader when it comes to, you know, betting on sports. If the sportsbook directors, guys, don't change here, don't start being innovators instead of, you know, status quo, everything that, you know, what we've done the last 25 years is A-okay. I mean, they're going to fall behind. And, you know, Jersey's doing a lot of great things there. You know, for example, if we're talking about, you know, things that they were doing for the Super Bowl, I saw one book was offering tails at 2-1, stuff like that. I mean, you're not getting down, you know, multiple thousands of dollars on it, but it's just stuff like that that they're doing that they're just not doing out here. And, I mean, it's not hurting them out here. The handle was the second biggest ever out here. But I'm telling you, I'm making the prediction, 5, 6, 7 years from now, it will, especially if California gets up and going, and that'll be the state that can really impact that in the state of Nevada when it comes to sports betting.
Well, for the next Super Bowl, we're going to have Illinois. So we'll have that gigantic Chicago market, which has been leaking over into Indiana, playing a lot there at Horseshoe Hammond and then the Ameristar property, you know, within a half hour, 45 minutes of Chicago. So again, as we keep getting more states on board, as we get some teams from jurisdictions that allow betting, you know, that's going to be really, really interesting overall when it comes to the Super Bowl. But one last note to make here about the NFL, and you and I talked a lot about this before we actually hit record here today. We've talked about this a lot on the show previously. There is no off season for any of these betting markets here. It is absolutely absurd that the ink is barely dry on the Super Bowl and the offshores already have NFL season win totals for 2020 out there. It's mind-boggling. It's frustrating as hell, because it'd be great to have a little bit of decompression and downtime, but my God, man, all of these sports are 365 days a year now.
Yeah, and the issue is you know, kudos for these, you know, offshore books and putting this stuff up, but how much can you get down and how much do you want to expose yourself and have it, you know, get carry over and have that book hold up your money for 10, 12 months? And, you know, do you want to ruin the market and have a bunch of people run in there and, you know, yeah, you get the best of the number and whatnot, but you only got a nickel down on the best of the number where if you wait and maybe you can get much better numbers, that stuff you got to ask yourself anymore. You know, kudos. I mean, that's just the way it is. But I think it goes to show you that I think more specialization probably is critical. The fact that there is really no off season with some of these markets, you got to be constantly on it. That with all these books being very super competitive, I would say more specialization because you're kicking, if you're jumping from sport to sport, you're missing a lot of great opportunities.
So I got to ask, man, I hear some barking in the background. Did you make a plus EV play and trade your cat for a dog?
No, it's some dog outside. I mean, I'm three floors up here. That's how loud that dog was. I mean, he's outside. I don't know. He's in the parking lot. I don't know what's going on. What is with, like, I don't have a, like, I do a ton of shows. I literally do. I do a ton of shows from my place. And the only time where animals have an impact is this, your show. Do you know that? And I do a lot of shows this time in the morning all across the country. And the biggest issue I have with animals is your show, Adam. So I don't know if you have a thing with animals and they hear me talking to you and they can sense some things that I can't, but I don't know what it is, man.
I don't know. I am an animal person, not a cat person at all. I'm a little bit allergic to them, but definitely a dog person. I'm happy to hear a dog here on today's show. It just, it makes sense, right? I mean, barking dogs, right? I mean, that's kind of what we want in this business, don't we?
I hear you. That one I don't want. I'll tell you what, if I wasn't talking to you and that was happening at 4 or 5 in the morning, it wouldn't have went appreciated. Let's just put it that way.
All right. Well, let's see if we got some barking dogs tonight here in the Pac-12 for college basketball. You like that segue? That was pretty good.
Yeah, that's good. That's called a pro. That's nice.
I got to be good at something, I guess. But the Pac-12 here in college basketball, I mean, I guess it's a little bit better than the Pac-12 in college football. I don't know. I guess
I think it is. Yeah, it's certainly a pleasant surprise because it's been bad for the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. Well, we got 4 games tonight out there in the Pac-12. But before we look specifically at any of those tonight, just kind of overall here, Brad, as we take a look at the Pac-12 conference in general, I mean, again, it's not a great conference necessarily. You got a couple of teams that are pretty solid in Arizona and Colorado. Oregon kind of in that second tier, but maybe has the most upside of anybody in this conference. Stanford, Washington, USC. No real pushovers outside of Cal, but as you look up and down the Pac-12, I mean, anybody that you would kind of consider throwing, you know, maybe a future shot on to hedge later in the tournament or something like that?
You know, you're right. I think Oregon, just because, I mean, they had the highest preseason expectations, and you got an all-star in Peyton Pritchard, and you got a team that has made several deep runs in the tournament recently. They would probably be the team that I'd be most likely to look at a future. But I'm really like what I'm seeing from Arizona, and a few things about them. I mean, it's not like they've been overwhelmingly fortunate to be where they're at. When you look at their losses, really only one really bad loss against Oregon State by 17. But, I mean, when you look at a team only lost by 5 on the road against Baylor, that doesn't look bad. Lose by 4 against a top-5 Gonzaga team, that's not bad. You know, a 3-point loss, St. John's, that's not good. But an overtime loss against Oregon, 1-point loss against Arizona State, you know, a bucket or two falls their way in a couple of those games. And I think we'd be thinking about Arizona a little bit differently here. And then you look at their schedule down the stretch. I mean, there's a good chance, you know, maybe the Stanford game would be one where it's going to be relatively close as far as the point spread. But they get Oregon at home, and this is a team that can really make a run here starting from this point forward. I wouldn't be a bit surprised they're favored in almost all their remaining games. So Arizona's a team, I think, that the buy sign's on.
Well, and that's one of those things, too. You talk about this all the time with regards to college football, kind of going back through and regrading teams' previous performances, you know, a couple weeks after the fact, kind of reevaluating how bad of a loss that was, how good of a loss that was. Because as we know, teams do change throughout the course of the season. And you look at Arizona, and you mentioned that one outlier, that 17-point loss to Oregon State. Well, that came after a very emotional, very difficult game on the road in Eugene against Oregon.
Good point.
That game by a point. Against Oregon State, they had their worst defensive performance of the year, almost 1.3 points per possession allowed. They just didn't have their legs on the defensive end. And you look at their full body of work, that's an outlier. And it's not to say that you can simply take that game away and totally ignore it, because they gave up 82 points in a 63-possession game. But it is simply to say you start finding reasons to explain some of these bad performances, and you know, you start to reevaluate what some of those things mean. And as you really focus in on it, yeah, Oregon State's not a very good team, but given the spot, given the situation, it doesn't look as bad. And it's important to do that now at this time of the year in college basketball with, you know, roughly half of the conference play season over with for some of these teams. And then, of course, the reevaluation of the non-conference.
Certainly is. And I think a good, if you don't want to do the work, and I understand it, I mean, you're getting off a long football season. I think a good, you know, factor that I like looking and taking into consideration, if you're looking for teams that are underrated, teams that are overrated, you know, look at KenPom's Luck Cat column. And right now, Arizona ranks number 315 in that category, meaning that Arizona has been an unfortunate team. I listed a bunch of those close losses for them. That's one factor I look in. Who's, you know, a little bit better than what their win-loss record looks at? And that takes into consideration what your, you know, offensive and defensive efficiencies were that game and what actually happened on the scoreboard. So I think that's something that I certainly utilize this time of the year, because you got, you know, 20-plus games of a sample size at this point.
Yeah, I'm looking through here. I think there are seven games for Arizona that have been decided by five or fewer points. They've lost five of them. And I know that's something you like to look at from a college football standpoint as well. You know, teams that lose a lot of really close games. I remember Eastern Michigan, was it maybe 2, 3, 4 years ago, something like that. They lost like every game decided by three or fewer points. And, you know, they started kind of regressing to the mean a little bit, you know, the next season where they started winning some of those close games. That is something worth keeping in mind. You know, Arizona probably playing a little bit better now than they were at certain points over the course of the season. 2-5 in close games decided by five or fewer points. They're probably going to regress to the mean positively. So, you know, and again, obviously, if you've got a team that's a very good free throw shooting team, maybe they have a bad record in close games. They're going to see improvement in that department too.
Yeah, and they're above average when it comes to free throws. You'd understand it if you have a really poor free throw shooting team, why they can't close it down the stretch, but Arizona's in the top 100 in free throws, so you would expect some improvement in that. And to me, I'm looking, you know, what would the narrative be instead of, you know, Arizona being 15-6? Maybe they win three more of those games. If they're sitting here at 18-3. We're talking about possible Final Four caliber team, considering how much parity there is in college basketball this year. But that's what I'm looking for this time of the year. Has it worked out for me? Not recently, but I'm not going to overreact to, you know, short sample size. It's worked for me a lot in the past.
Arizona laying 10 tonight, hosting USC. So a game that's not expected to be all that close, but, you know, obviously we'll see if they're able to go out there and cover the number. But again, that is an important thing. And in particular too, you know, we talked about this a lot with a lot of people going into the college basketball market now, betting the teams that they know, betting the ranked teams, stuff like that. Not a bad idea to do a little bit more of a deep dive on some of those teams. See if they have gotten lucky. See if they have gotten unlucky. Maybe you get an extra point or two of value on some of those numbers.
Yeah, and you know, I'm glad you brought up SC, because they're completely on the other side of the coin. They're a very fortunate team. They've won a bunch of close games. And again, you mentioned the line's not necessarily, you know, tight tonight. But, I mean, here's a USC team that won by two against TCU, won by two against LSU. You know, have an overtime win against Stanford, did lose in double overtime against Oregon, but you know, had last week, even last Thursday, a close win against Utah. That they've had a lot of, you know, for them, a lot of close wins, and you look at their losses, a majority of them blowout variety. So we have to, you know, but the market takes this into consideration. I mean, SC's got the better record. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people that are walking the sports book And, you know, this is very square, but they're going to see SC's record 17-5, see Arizona's record, and see SC catching a big number here. I would guess that a lot of people, if you're just square as can be, and you can get that, and, you know, with college hoops, with people looking to get some action out with football over, I think they're going to want to bet SC, and that's where I think there's value. Is it a tremendous amount of value? No, but you're looking for every half point, and I think that might be the case here.
So as we look at a couple of other games tonight, Stanford on the road in Utah, they start that altitude double. They'll play Colorado here this weekend. Cal also in that altitude double. And I mentioned Cal on the show before. Their road numbers are just beyond atrocious. I mean, they are awful. At home, they're not bad. But tonight against Colorado, they're getting 16. It was 17 at open. That feels a little bit high to me. I had a listener and a reader actually reach out about that game here this morning. But again, keep an eye on that altitude double. Remember that there are travel partners. And also, too, with the Pac-12, you know this as well as I do. You play Arizona and then Arizona State. You play Oregon and then Oregon State. You play Washington with that zone. Then you play Washington State. Some of these road trips are very, very difficult, especially the deeper you get into the season as some of that fatigue sets in a little bit.
Certainly. And it's always that, you know, most of the time, Thursday, Saturday. So it's not like you got and that's why I love, you know, handicapping college hoops, because you got some of these different type of conference schedule formats. The one I this is one that I like, because I think there's just a little bit more value. And, you know, certainly the altitude to play against. I can tell you this, I'm not going to blindly play on it, but I don't want to blindly play on the team in the second of the back-to-back road in altitude on short rest, especially for a team that's not necessarily deep like a Cal. I love the Pac-12 schedule. I think it offers opportunity for betting. Since I moved out here, I followed it a hell of a lot more. But yeah, I think it's I wish there would be more scheduling like that across the board. I think it'd make college basketball handicapping a lot more interesting and a lot more fun.
Yeah, definitely. Another conference out in sort of that part of the country, the Big Sky, also has a lot of spots like that with different elevation changes. Some teams that are closer to sea level, stuff like that. So again, at this time of the year, if you are just starting out with college basketball, try to find some of those travel spots, some of those altitude spots, some of those things that, yeah, may look pretty easy, and you may think that they are factored into the line. And in some obvious cases, they definitely are, but especially in the low major conferences, they are not necessarily factored into the number. So you can get some decent value with those. Brad, one last thing I want to finish up with here. Yesterday was National Signing Day. I know at your core, you are a football guy. You've always been a college football guy, going back to your days with Phil Steele Publications. As far as signing day goes, as far as looking at some of the 2020 classes here, any notes you want to pass along for us to file away in the back of our minds?
I'm going to give you a few here, and bear with me. I know a lot of people probably don't want to hear college football right now, but, you know, I think it needs to be said. Clemson just signed their best class ever. Clemson has been doing this under Dabo Swinney without being an elite recruiting type of team. Clemson has never signed a top five class before. Never, never. Only have signed a couple of top 10 classes, even in this run the last 7-8 years, and they just signed the number three class. So if you're thinking that Clemson dynasty is going to slow down anytime soon, I think you're sorely mistaken. So that would be one. A couple of teams that I think are on the up and up and just signed really good classes yesterday. One would be Tennessee, who really closed well, finished with a top 10 class in some of the services. And keep in mind, that's a Tennessee team in the second year under Jeremy Pruitt. Finished strong, 6 straight wins for the Volunteers. Certainly carried over for recruiting. I think they've solidified themselves as the third best team in the SEC East. I know it doesn't sound great, but, man, Tennessee's been a borderline bowl team, or in fact, a losing team. Certainly in SEC play, that's been the case over the last decade for them. They're certainly on much more stable ground than what they've been pretty much at any point in the last 10, 12 years for them. The other team to keep an eye on, signed a top 20 class, is the North Carolina Tar Heels, who are doing a great job on the recruiting front under Mack Brown. Very experienced team coming back from this past season. I love their quarterback, Sam Howell. I think that could be the second best team in the ACC heading into the season. And finally, on the negative side, oh my goodness, USC. And I'm not sure this is getting enough play. Just signed like the number 55 class. Adam, you, me, and let's find 7-8 other guys. I think we could recruit the number 55 class at USC. I mean, that just goes to show you all the speculation around Clay Helton's job. The kids aren't buying it. It's hurting the program. I mean, probably should have let Clay Helton go, because the only thing they're doing is they're making it extremely hard for the next coach to win. That's back-to-back really subpar classes for SC, who had never signed a class outside the top 20, 55 this year. That's remarkable.
It is remarkable. And you know what? Unless they elevate Graham Harrell to the head coach in some way, shape, or form, they're going to lose him at the end of this upcoming season too. And that's going to hurt. So USC's in a bad way, man. They are in a very, very bad spot. And I don't know what the end in sight is. You know, I mean, obviously it seems like they don't have any money, which is why they kept Clay Helton around. I don't know what they're going to do. I really don't know. But, man, I will say a couple of follow-up points there. I like Tennessee going into this season, and I love North Carolina going into this season. I don't know if they're going to knock off Clemson in the ACC championship game, but I think they're going to get there. And, you know, obviously they played right with them last year. I'm going to bet North Carolina season win total over. I'm going to bet them to win the division. I'm going to like a lot of things about North Carolina for next year. I just hope I'm not priced out of the market too much.
I don't think you're going to be alone. I'm going to try to beat you to the punch. Let's just put it that way. They're very experienced. 10 returning starters on offense, the last I checked. I really like Sam Howell. I think he's a guy that's going to be a possible first-round draft pick as a quarterback.
Sam Howell win a Heisman? Maybe not this year, but does Sam Howell win a Heisman before he leaves?
I think certainly the odds are against him. I would probably put the price on him winning the Heisman probably 20-1. You'd probably take that. You take that bet.
I mean,
I'm talking his career. I think it's more 40-1, and then I don't know, maybe 10-1 his junior year.
But I'm only getting 2 years because he'll leave early, I would think.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah. So not a good bet. But
he put up historic freshman type numbers last year. I mean, the group of quarterbacks that he's with, I mean, almost all of them have won a Heisman or start on Sundays in the NFL. So there is that.
And to pull this all around, I'll try to help you here. I know as good as what you're doing, teasing and throwing across, whatnot. And you talk about close games. That North Carolina won a bunch of close games, but I think every one of their losses was, by 7 points or less. So that's a team that easily could have won 10 games this year. And if they're capable of doing that in year one under Mac Brown, they might just go ahead and do it this upcoming year and win 9 or 10 games, because I really like the coordinators.
Always good to chat with professional handicapper Brad Powers from bradpowerssports.com. Brad, what's going on over at the website right now, man?
Yeah, two things. Real quick, since we just talked football, newsletters available, $79, NFL, college. Next issue will come out in March. We'll preview spring practice. And if there's any other, early season win totals or whatnot, early spreads on games, we'll get you covered there. That'll be coming your way next issue in a month as we already prepare for the 2020 season. But right now going on, daily college basketball VIP updates, $199 through the national championship game. You get an update every single day. You get picks from me every single day, bets that I make every single day. And that's available at bradpowersports.com.
And, of course, as always, make sure you follow Brad on Twitter, @BradPowers and the number 7. Brad, great to chat with you, man. Appreciate our time. As always, thank you so much for joining me. We'll talk to you again real soon.
All right. Take care, my friend.
There you go. There's Brad Powers, professional handicapper over at BradPowersSports.com. And, of course, you can find him on Twitter, @BradPowers and the number 7. We got one more guest, one more segment here for this Thursday edition of the show. That is with John Ryan, Bang the Book contributor for us. @JohnRyanSports and the number 1 on Twitter. John, how's it going today, man?
It's going great, Adam. How about you?
Doing very well, buddy. Appreciate your time here. Thank you so much for joining me once again. And I guess real quickly here, since I've been doing this with a lot of guests throughout the week, the Super Bowl. I know you mentioned you liked San Francisco, thought there was a chance of San Francisco maybe winning that game by some margin. And, you know, for a little bit there, they were. They did have that 10-point lead. Then Kyle Shanahan gets kind of weird with his play calling. Kansas City makes some plays, gets back in it. We all know how the Super Bowl finished up, but you know, overall, just kind of your impressions on the game, and you know, especially the fact that you know you're kind of in that Pennsylvania, New Jersey area. You know what you kind of saw from those, retail sports books as this business continues to grow.
Well, the game was disappointing down the end, but not shocking. There was some adjustments going on in that game where, you know, Kansas City's linebackers were a big weakness for them. And in the beginning of the game, you could see the 49ers were targeting those types of plays. And then Kansas City made the adjustment. San Francisco didn't. But I was very happy that Andy Reid got his Super Bowl win. You know, he's deserving of it, certainly. I'll preface that, though, that I think Mahomes was the guy who won the game because, in my opinion, Reid was outcoached in the Super Bowl for three quarters. And it was going the way we had thought and the way you and I had discussed, based on my opinion. But when Mahomes started taking it on his own shoulder, he looked like a kid playing pickup football in the backyard. And he was slinging it all over the place. And, you know, the third and 15 play, I think we'll remember for a long time. That was just remarkable. But at the end of the day, you know, I wanted the 49ers. And it just didn't come through. It was the fourth loss now in the Super Bowl in the last 20. So when I look at it that way, you know, the sting isn't so bad.
Well, like we said, you know, we've talked about this a lot here throughout the week that, you know, obviously Nevada did very well. A lot of the other states didn't do so well, although they kind of seem to use the Super Bowl as more of a promotional tool than anything else. So we will see how that plays out going forward. And in particular, when we get some Super Bowl teams that, you know, are in jurisdictions where betting is legal. I mean, you know, who knows what the Super Bowl line would have looked like a couple of years ago with the Eagles in it. You know, obviously there's a chance that the Steelers get back at some point. Maybe the Bears, when Mitch Trubisky is no longer the quarterback, maybe they get there once Illinois goes live. So that'll be something very, very interesting to follow, to say the least, here in future Super Bowls. But let's transition over to the hardwood side of things here, John. And we take a look at the Big East, and you do a week overview over at bangthebook.com for us in both the Big East as well as the Big Ten. Last night, Butler gets their revenge, falls pretty close to the number against Villanova, winning by 3. Providence with a big win over Creighton at home. And, of course, we got several games coming up here on Saturday that we'll take a look at. But, you know, as far as the Big East goes, I mean, are things kind of playing out the way you expected them to?
Yeah, it's the conference ranks third best in the nation on my rankings. Big Ten, obviously, is light years better than everybody else. And then the Big 12, Big East. And the Big East is so much fun to watch because every game, even if they're playing the worst team in the conference, it's very competitive. There's not one game that a team can count on to win because you always have to be focused and on full alert. Otherwise, you're going to get upset and you're going to go home with a loss. You know, Butler is a great team that could win the conference, certainly. I still like Villanova. Villanova played well last night. They didn't win the game. But I guess in many ways you can be satisfied playing well and coming away with a road loss. But Villanova has a tradition of getting better and better in the month of February, and I think we're seeing that unfold once again. You know, Wright is one of the best coaches in the country, and this isn't anything new. He's basically repeating the process. So I would have to think Villanova is the favorite to win the conference and get the auto bid to the dance. But there will be many teams from the conference that will go to the tournament for sure.
Well, and I think you look at Villanova last night, and, you know, what kind of stands out to me is that Butler had been having some issues offensively, but they wind up with almost 1.3 points per possession against Villanova last night. But Villanova's offense also performed very well against a good Butler defense. And this is something we talked about in the previous segment with Brad Powers, is that, you know, you really have to evaluate each and every loss for these teams because you want to see, was it an outlier? Was it a bad spot? Did they play well but just come up on the short end of the stick? And one thing I have noticed for Villanova here is that they've had some substantial issues forcing turnovers on defense. And with their offense, the more possessions they get, the better off they're going to be. Last night in that game against Butler, they only forced 6 turnovers in that game. Now, of course, Butler only forced 3 of their own, but that's the thing here is, you know, as you really dig into a lot of these games, you want to look at the reasons why a team lost. I think for Villanova last night, there really aren't a lot of reasons that stand out as to why they lost. So that is one that does classify as, you know, one of those quote unquote good losses.
Yeah, I agree, Adam. And the key to beating Villanova is minimizing the second chance scoring opportunities, as you mentioned. And that comes on the rebounding edge. And I believe Butler did a very good job on the defensive end, limiting their second chance scoring opportunities. And that's the first step to beating Villanova. Villanova likes the three. They like to score points. They're really good when they score 81 or more points. And they just fell short last night. I think you're right. It's not a loss where you go, you know, is this an example of the 76ers in the NBA where there is problems? But Villanova is, you know, the 10th best team in the country and deservingly so.
Now, I guess I would follow up sort of asking you about this here. You know, we kind of look at Creighton's performance. I know you talked about Creighton in your article over at bangthebook.com here for this weekend. Creighton's one of those tough teams because we know that they live and die with a lot of jump shots. When they go on the road, it can be a little bit difficult for them. And they did wind up going on the road here, and they did end up losing last night in pretty lopsided fashion to Providence, a game where they played a good first half, played a bad second half, got badly outscored in the second half. But you know, that's something that we don't talk about as much in the Big East as we do in, say, the Big 10 or the Big 12. But this is a little bit of a tough travel conference sometimes, and there are some teams, Creighton in particular, that may have some issues traveling the rest of the way.
Yeah, and that is what makes the conference so tough, just like the Big 10, the Big 12. When you go on the road, if you're supposed to win the game being favored by 5 or 6 or 7 points, it's not an automatic win. And if anything, the home team that probably needs to win more than the road warrior in the standings is going to play one of their best games of the season, perhaps, and get the upset win. We've seen a lot of that this year for sure. So in this, you know, this particular game was a bit of a shocker, and it is the opposite of what we talked about with Villanova. This is not a good loss in any stretch of the imagination. And getting outscored 41-20 in the second half against Providence, no matter where it is not a good half of basketball. You know, their starters, you know, they had four players with double-digit points, which isn't bad. But Zagorowski, you know, did not play a good game. He was 1-for-10, and that hurts. 1-for-10 in 39 minutes. So that, you know, 0-for-5 from three-point territory. He did have 7 assists, but that's hard to make up by the other four guys on the court when you go 1-for-10.
So that being said, as we take a look at Creighton here, we transition to looking ahead at some of the games coming up on Saturday. They host St. John's. Is this a bounce back spot for the Blue Jays in your mind?
It has to be. In their eyes, they got to go back to the practice and just put it behind them. And, you know, that was one game. We played like crap, and now we're going to face a team that we should beat. But again, it's a situation where St. John's is 2-8 in the conference and second to last place, only DePaul is worse. So you have to have your guard up. Perhaps this loss yesterday at Providence woke them up and a slap in the face, and they'll come out and play a really solid game against St. John's. So I think that's a game to look at as a bet for sure.
Yeah, and over in your article over at bangthebook.com, you do mention here for St. John's that 2-6 against the spread here on the season with 5 days rest. So they get some time to sit there and think about that game. But of course, Creighton also gets some time to sit there and think about what happened with their blowout loss to Providence. Maybe that is a very, very good spot with everything coming together for us with that Creighton and St. John's game coming up here on Saturday. Seton Hall last night, they're a winner over Georgetown 78-71. They get that aforementioned Villanova team here coming up on Saturday. And I know that's a game that you mentioned in your article that you'd have an update for us on Twitter, but I guess I'm going to kind of put you on the spot here a little bit and say, do you have an update now based on what we saw last night?
Yeah, I do, Adam. I'm going to go with Villanova in that game. I like games in February where you have the two best teams in the conference going head to head. I always used to look forward to the ACC, which was normally North Carolina and Duke, but this year that's going to be different. But this is the showdown. This is the game that, without question, will win the conference. Of course, you know, the winner could then end up losing and stumbling, of course, in this conference. But I do think that the winner of this game is going to have enough momentum to hold off everybody else chasing them. Seton Hall did lose to Xavier. That was one of the picks from the article the previous week. And, you know, Villanova has three losses. They're two games behind. So who needs the game more? And teams that have, like a Seton Hall is certainly outperforming expectations from the preseason. So when they have that first loss, I know personally, you know, a long time ago when I was in sports, there's a tendency to question, like, are we really that good? We just lost to Xavier, which is not a bad team. But we were just rolling along, and all of a sudden we my goodness, we lost. Maybe we're not as good as they say. You know, and that's where great coaching comes into play. You know, like a Jay Wright and so many others. So I'm sure Seton Hall will be okay. They're obviously going to the tournament. But this is a game in Philly, and I just don't see how Seton Hall is going to have enough to overcome that home court advantage and everything that Villanova brings to a game that they must win.
Well, you did like Seton Hall last night over Georgetown. They do cover the number. They were -4.5. They won by 7. Now you're going to go against Seton Hall here this weekend against Villanova. And, you know, obviously it makes sense too. I mean, Villanova off of a couple of losses. We'll see what that number ends up looking like. I'm guessing probably Villanova -3.5, -4, something like that, in that type of range. But, you know, you've had a pretty good pulse here on the Big East, and it almost to a degree, and you don't want to, you know, fall victim to this all the time, but that age-old zigzag theory of kind of, you know, bet on one team when they cover and win for you, you kind of go against them the next game, seems like in a balanced conference that may not be the worst of, not approaches, but starting points to kind of take a look at.
Yeah, it is, Adam. This situation that where I'm going to be on Villanova is just coincidental to that. But if you go into any database, and I could do that and post that on Twitter later and give the record for the Big East this year versus other seasons where you're basically betting against a team that is off a one game exact ATS loss and going up against a team that's off an exact ATS win, one game, you know, no streak, I think the results would be quite good. You know, around the 60% level, which is quite good.
Now, I will say this. We'll transition over to the NBA here in a second, but getting away from the Big East for just a moment here, Western Carolina and Samford last night down in the SoCon. Western Carolina wins by 8, covers all the numbers that were out there. That one closed 4 pretty much market-wide. But over on your Twitter page, at John Ryan Sports and the number 1, you had a tweet about a system with Samford, where it was a situation where they just didn't perform very well. And in fact, they wind up not performing very well last night either. So you mentioned a lot of those machine learning tools and a lot of systems that you look at. Samford was one that came through last night, and I'm sure you'll have plenty more over at John Ryan Sports and the number 1.
Yeah, absolutely. I try to put up at least half a dozen a day. Some days you get busy and you can't do that. But, you know, for everybody that's listening and following, just send me a direct message. And if you have any ideas, you know, like you want to see the results of a team that's off 2 straight losses and is playing a team with a win percentage of 75%. You're only limited by your mind and your creativity to learn about these things. You know, it's just like, wow. I wonder what Villanova does after 2 straight up losses. And that's how you begin the research.
Well, in that Samford trend last night, they were 0-10-1 against the spread, failing to cover by an average of 8.8 points per game against an opponent shooting 45% or better on the season. And, you know, Western Carolina scores 78 points. And as I mentioned, does cover that number there against Samford. So make sure you follow John on Twitter at John Ryan Sports, the number 1. To get some of those good trends and systems on a daily basis. But John, we transition over to the NBA side of things here, and I'll pose a similar question that I asked to Brian Leonard on yesterday's show. The All-Star break is about a week away. We've got two games next Thursday night. So 26 teams start the All-Star break either on Tuesday or Wednesday. And we talk about buying low and selling high, and we'll do that here throughout this segment. But are there any types of teams or any types of situations that you do try to buy or sell with that extended All-Star break on the horizon?
I think the teams that over the years, generally speaking, that are struggling, meaning, you know, 40 to 50% win percentage, that are on a three game or more losing streak already, are not bounce back candidates. And if anything, they're playing like they just can't wait to get to the break. So that's the one thing I have in mind, looking forward here over the last few days before the break. I did want to mention something about the trades on the Bulls side. I think the trades that are, I guess the Sixers trade is still pending, but it looks like it's going to go through. I think that was a home run for that team. Their biggest problem in Philly is that their players are so young that they lack that veteran leadership that all championship teams have. So last year, I would say the veteran leader was probably Jimmy Butler. And now that he's not there, I think there's a really big gap in that leadership role. I don't think it's like the media likes to say it's Embiid versus Simmons, and they don't get along. And, you know, the pair isn't as good as we thought they were going to be. And I highly disagree with that. I think having a player like Burks in the lineup now, who is having one of the he is having the best year of his career, is going to help them immensely. You know, especially here in the Philly area, they constantly complain that Simmons won't shoot a three, that he just simply refuses to shoot it. Well, having Burks now along his side, because he'll play the second guard, is going to be monumental for Simmons. Because now he has a trusted shooter to pass to. And in case people haven't noticed, I think Simmons is a definite candidate for Defensive Player of the Year. So he's playing to his strengths. His strengths are not shooting threes. And just because you're in the guard position doesn't mean you have to shoot threes. So I think that's going to go a long way to calming, you know, the Philadelphia Sixer fan base down a little bit here.
Yeah, and I think the trades are really interesting to try and figure out, because on one hand, I look at the NBA as such a rhythmic type of sport, and I think we've talked about that before on our previous segments, where, you know, as teams start to win two or three in a row, maybe it's time to ride that streak. As they start to lose a couple of games in a row, maybe it's time to ride that streak too, because there's just some sort of disconnect. There's something that's short-circuiting with the way that they're doing things, whether it's rotating on offense, rotating on defense, maybe a key substitution player went out, the rotation's all screwed up. A lot of times, you know, the NBA is almost such a detail-oriented league, a very nuanced type of league, because you only have five guys out there at once, and, you know, they play together for very long stretches of time. So, you know, you do sort of look for some of those buy and sell situations with regards to trades as well, and I think maybe you have hit on one here with Philadelphia.
Yeah, I'm bullish on Philly. I think it's reasonable. They're going to be underpriced in the market because of their losing ways and the rhetoric coming out of the media. So I think, you know, you go contrary to that, and
Let me interrupt you for a second here, John, because I do want to ask you about that. You know, I know you've got all the machine learning tools, but you mentioned rhetoric. Narrative is something else that we say a lot. Do you find a lot of buy sell just from, you know, kind of taking the pulse of the media and what they're saying about teams?
It's part of the equation. Sentiment is basically what sets the price in the market for the line. So my stuff might say, you know, the outcome of the game, the Sixers should win by 11 against any team. I'm just throwing out an example. But because of the sentiment and how soured people are about the Sixers, they don't want to bet the Sixers and lose money and appear to be stupid, which is human nature. So what happens is the betting line does become steadily more and more undervalued when the sentiment is just overwhelmingly negative. And it works in opposite direction, too. If it's overwhelmingly positive, which would be possibly the Miami Heat, are getting into that zone of being a little bit overvalued. But again, to circle back to the sentiment, it is, you know, something I learned on Wall Street with trading. And when you have 70% of the people being bullish versus 30% bearish, for whatever reason, the side to be on is the bear side. So in the case of the Sixers, everybody's bearish on the Sixers. We'd never bet them, and, you know, if it was the last game on the card, and that's where you probably want to start looking. And it's hard to do. It took me a long time to do the opposite of your intuition. But believe me, it definitely works.
Well, the Miami Heat here, possibly a fade candidate going into the All-Star break. 5 games in 8 days out on the road out west. So a long road trip for them. Maybe some of their prices do wind up, you know, being in a pretty good range here. But to circle back, and obviously there will be a good number of trades here, I would say, by this 3 o'clock deadline here today. But to circle back to talking about the All-Star break, you mentioned not looking for a great bounce back factor from teams that are already not playing well, already looking forward to the All-Star break. Is there a flip side to that coin? Are there teams that you would look to buy?
Yeah, the teams that are playing them. Not to be, you know, stating the obvious here, but, you know, if I have the Miami Heat, which I just said are overvalued, but not quite yet, but coming down to the finish line here for the first half of the, you know, before the All-Star break, the Heat would be a candidate to play against one of those teams that's on a 3-game losing streak. And again, these are professional athletes, and they don't necessarily think, you know, like I'm going to suggest they do, but a team that's has a losing record, realizing that they're not going to be in the playoffs, there was no attempt to improve the team through trade, is facing a team that is definitely in the playoff mix or one of the division leaders, you can't be too optimistic that you're going to beat them. And then the better team, the one that's in contention, is going to be pumped up to make sure they do win and they get that positive momentum going into the All-Star break so that when they come out of it, it's still all positive. I hope that made sense.
No, it does. No, I totally agree and understand with what you're saying there. And I guess that sort of leads me to my next question of, you know, maybe outside of these streaky teams here, is there a team you're looking to buy low right now in the NBA?
There's a couple that are really appealing right now. Let me just take a look at my grid here, because there's many of them that are candidates. You know, the Denver Nuggets with their move and their star player, they definitely are on the buy list. Between now and the All-Star break, and then certainly the rest of the season, I'm sure there'll be numerous plays from my models to play on the Nuggets. Their trade obviously is going to help them immensely. So that's one that we definitely want to look at. There's one stat I look at too in the second half of the season, and it's double digit scorers. And as simple as it sounds, it really is a valuable metric. So we're talking about the Heat, and sometimes you hear in the media, like, you know, how can the Heat be having this great a season? Well, you do a quick search in the database, and they lead the league with having 42 games with 5 or more double digit scorers. So the fact that just tells you right there that they're passing the ball well, they're sharing it. It truly doesn't matter who scores the points, and it's all gelling. The chemistry is quite good on the Heat, and that's reflecting why it is. Conversely, you know, the teams on the bottom of that metric, the Hawks have had 10 scores or 10 games of 5 double-digit scores. You know, they have the superstar down there that is scoring a lot of the points for the team. The Warriors have 17. Interestingly, the 76ers only have 23 games where they had 5 double-digit scorers. So that, again, you know, getting back to the Sixers story, that again tells you how important this Burks acquisition is. And, you know, Glenn Robinson is hitting 40% from 3-point territory in his own right. And this might be the opportunity that Robinson needs to have to resurrect his career. So now the Sixers have that perimeter They have two good perimeter three-point shooters coming on this roster. So that 23 number is going to go up in the second half. And that's another reason to be bullish on them. You know, the Lakers are in the same camp as the Sixers. They have 26 games with five or more double-digit scores. They're led by, obviously, LeBron and AD. But they're going to, they know themselves from their veteran experience that they're going to have other players start stepping up if they're going to win the championship. So there again, the Lakers, despite having such a great record, you can still be bullish on them. Just looking at some of the other ones here, Adam. You know, Toronto. Toronto is definitely a bull candidate. And I would expect them to possibly make a run again for the division title. And also, they could be a contender for the conference. They have had 33 games, five or more double-digit scores. They have a great assist-to-turnover ratio. They rebound well. There's nothing glaringly bad that I can say about Toronto that would make me cautious in any game that pops up from my models.
Well, of course, depth is such a big thing, especially because, you know, if you're dependent on two or three players, if one of those guys has an off night, makes it very, very difficult for you. And we see that all the time in college basketball, where some of these teams just have one or two primary scorers. And if one of those two guys are off or is off, and, you know, if both of them are off, then they don't really have a chance. So, you know, sharing is caring, I guess they would say here in the NBA. A very good system there from John Ryan. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at John Ryan Sports and the number one. And John, I know you wanted to share a special offer with our listeners today.
Yeah, I thought it would be a good idea to have people get 5 days of free premium service, the plays that my models produce, the same plays that are hitting 60% and 62% in the NBA and college basketball this season. Over the last three seasons, spanning 551 college and NBA picks, I am a documented 61% against the spread on several websites. So having five free days gives you a real good test drive of how my methodology works, that it's not based on games of the year, games of the month. It's simply every day you wake up, you grind it out, win or lose. You wake up the next day, grind it out. But having the confidence knowing that over the time period of a season that it's going to be profitable. And that's been the number one key to my success is you don't get too high, you don't get too low. If you go 0-4, you wake up and you go at it again. You go 4-0, you don't get all four of yourself and think that you've just, you know, solved the mysteries of the world. You know, every day is a challenge and an opportunity. So to get to 5 days, send me a direct message on Twitter and use the password Adam. How does that sound?
Sounds good to me. And again, make sure you follow John on Twitter at John Ryan Sports and the number one, and use that password, Adam, for 5 days for free of John's premium service. John, always a pleasure, man. Thank you so much for joining me. Really appreciate our time together, and we'll talk to you again next week.
You got it. Thank you very much, Adam.
There you go. There's John Ryan once again on Twitter at John Ryan Sports and the number one. 5 days free of premium service. Send him a DM with that password, Adam. Coming up on our Friday edition of Bang the Book Radio, I'll do a grab bag segment, talk some NBA, NHL, MLB, and college basketball heading into the weekend. And we'll also chat with our friend Greg Peterson from the Hoopin' with Hoops podcast. You can also hear him on VSiN. We'll chat with Greg about all things college basketball here heading on into the weekend. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.